I sat in the cockpit of the transport, aware that if a catastrophe were going to happen, it would already have occurred.
Mars, can you hear me? Well, that's that. Let's take our bird out of here and find out where we are.
Yes, sir.
Nobles flipped a switch, and the lights came back online in the cockpit. Hitting our thrusters ever so slightly, he lifted us off the ground to rotate the transport so that our nose faced the runway. He tapped a button and looked out the windshield.
COE-1, this is Marine-1. The atmospheric gates are not responding. Repeat, COE-1, I am unable to open the gates. Lieutenant Mars warned me this might happen while we were preparing for launch.
Come again?
The atmospheric locks are not responding, sir. Mars said that could happen.
I put on my helmet, and Nobles parked the transport and opened the rear hatch for me. The artificial gravity that rooted me to the deck of the transport did not extend beyond its ramp. I leaped into the void and floated across the open landing bay floor as smoothly as a cloud rolls across the sky.
Spec, what is it?
I drifted right up to the wall and pounded a fist into the insulation.
They sealed the doors to the ship.
I had hoped to search the ship for explosives or maybe a laser welder, something I could use to cut through the atmospheric locks.
It's insulation. That's what kept the electricity out of the landing bay.
It's also sealing us in. You wouldn't happen to have anything we can use to cut our way out.
You mean a laser welder?
Yeah.
No, sir. Did you bring any weapons we can use?
I have an M27 and a torpedo.
Didn't you say the torpedo was a nuke?
Affirmative.
Maybe we should save that for a last resort, sir.
There's got to be some way out of here.
I pushed off the rubberized wall and launched myself past the transport and glided to the far end of the bay. With its electronics offline, the massive atmospheric lock was just another wall. It was designed to be bulletproof, fireproof, and radiation resistant.
Spec!
I kicked off the lock and entered the transport through its ass where the artificial gravity brought me to my feet. I turned to take one last look across the landing bay. Surely there had to be a welding torch or a drill. Hell, even a particle beam might do the trick. A particle beam? A tiny pistol, its disruptive beam might tear through the insulation. The standard issue particle beam pistol was small, so small you could throw one in your rucksack and forget it was there. I hit the button, closing the rear doors, then grabbed my rucksack and headed up to the cockpit.
What are you doing?
I have an idea.
I pulled out my clothes. I pulled out my Charlie service pants and blouse, not really flinging them away, but not watching where they landed. And then, at the bottom of my rucksack, where I hoped I might find a particle beam pistol, I found nothing.
So what are you looking for?
A particle beam weapon.
Did you bring one?
Apparently not. I don't suppose you did.
No. So what do we do now?
Isn't it obvious?
We die?
We wait. We're in a battleship that just sailed into occupied space. If the Scutum Crux fleet is anywhere near here, Warshaw will send ships out to investigate.
Oh, hey, maybe I should send out a distress signal.
Good idea.
The fighters came first. Trapped within the landing bay, unable to scan the area outside the battleship, we had no idea whether we were dealing with a couple of fighters or an entire fleet. I identified myself as General Wason Harris of the Enlisted Man's Marines.
It doesn't look like you have much of a ship there, General.
This battleship is deader than dinosaur shit. My pilot and I are sitting in a transport inside the battleship. The transport works. The battleship was just an empty husk we used to surf through the broadcast zone.
You'd say you rode a dead battleship through the broadcast zone.
That just about sums it up.
Tell you what, General. You just fly out and we will escort you down to the planet.
I can't. The landing bay hatch is broken.
This just keeps getting more interesting. Is this a readiness drill?
Pilot, what is your name?
Stanford, sir. Petty Officer First Class Jefferson Stanford.
I assure you, Petty Officer First Class Stanford, this is not a drill. This is not a specking joke. I want you to call your commanding officer and report your findings.
Another hour of silence followed.
What if they don't come back?
They will.
Another hour passed, and they came back en masse.
Harris, is that really you in there?
Who am I speaking with?
Are you a message in a bottle or a guinea pig?
Who is this?
This is Hank Bishop, captain of the EMF Kamehameha.
No shit.
Stay put, Harris. I have some engineers on the way. We'll get you out of there.
Another hour passed, and the atmospheric gates slid open. A squadron of fighters met our transport as we emerged from the battleship and escorted us to the Kamehameha. When I first transferred to the Scutum Crux arm, my orders were to assume command of the fleet. Those orders changed when Gary Warshaw, the fleet's highest-ranking non-com, made an end run. He paid an unauthorized visit to the Pentagon to whine about a Marine taking command of the fleet. He might have been acting like a weasel, but he was right. Admiral Brocious, the highest-ranking officer in the Unified Authority Navy, rewrote my orders. Warshaw took command of the fleet, and I became Commandant of the Marines. Then the Earth Fleet attacked, and our bickering came to an end. The Kamehameha, flagship of the Enlisted Man's Fleet, formerly the Scutum Crux Fleet, traveled out to meet us alone. That in and of itself suggested that something was wrong. Fighter carriers, particularly flagships, do not travel without support. But there she sat, in an isolated pocket of space, with no other ships in sight, the Kamehameha, flagship of the Enlisted Man's Fleet. 5 months had passed since the Unified Authority attacked Terrano. I'd seen plenty of capital ships since the attack, but they were derelicts floating in space, as dark and lifeless as the vacuum around them. The Kamehameha, for all her battles, was anything but dead. The entire ship was a patchwork of dark walls and bright spots, with light shining from viewports and observation decks. A squadron of fighters circled her bow.
Transport, this is Kamehameha Flight Control. Come in.
Flight Control, this is Transport.
Do not raise your shields on your approach.
Copy that, Flight Control. That's pretty damn obvious. I wonder if they also have a recorded message in their officer's head reminding them to wipe their asses after taking a shit. Flight Control, please be advised we are carrying a nuclear torpedo.
Transport, please repeat.
Be advised that this transport has been outfitted with a nuclear-tipped torpedo.
Transport, stop your engines and power down. Wait for further instructions.
Noble stopped the transport and cut the power.
They're giving us a security scan. They don't trust us. Can't say I blame them.
It took about 5 minutes to complete the scan.
Transport pilot, we have detected that your ship is armed. Can you confirm?
Affirmative. I already told you about it. We have a nuclear-tipped torpedo.
What is the purpose of that torpedo?
I placed a hand on Noble's shoulder to stop him from answering and leaned into the microphone.
It makes a hell of a conversation piece.
I will ask you again. What is the purpose of your weapon?
I did not answer. A moment later, the controller gave us clearance to land. Our escort led us to an open docking bay and left. Nobles piloted the transport in the bay and landed on the sled that would pull us through the three atmospheric locks. As the manufactured atmospheres equalized around us and the gigantic metal hatches cut us off from space, he busied himself shutting down his flight controls.
I bet they're surprised to see us.
I agreed, but I wondered how happy Warshaw would be about my reappearance. About 20 minutes passed as the bomb squads came out and examined our transport. Finally, we were given clearance to exit the transport. A sailor in a captain's uniform came up beside me. I knew the man, but I would not have been able to distinguish him from any other clone had I not recognized the captain's insignia on his uniform.
Permission to come aboard, Captain Bishop?
Permission granted.
Are we near a front?
Well, not out here in Cygnus. The only fighting in the Cygnus arm is infighting.
So what's with all the security? I half expected your MPs to check my body cavities.
We are at war, you know.
This isn't wartime security. Wartime security is a fighter escort and armed guards at the door.
It's not the war that's got us worried. The war's going well. Everything else is falling apart.
After leaving the flight deck, Bishop led me to the bridge. We're not going to fleet command?
Not now, no.
Is Warshaw up there?
Why are you in such a rush to see Warshaw?
Oh, there were so many good responses, both politic answers and flaming. I get the feeling I'm still being screened.
Something like that.
I'm not a spy. You don't really think the Unified Authority captured me, trapped me in a battleship, and sent me through that broadcast zone?
General, I don't know what to think. You're not even supposed to be alive.
I walked through the posts. What did your computers tell you?
You've got the DNA of a Liberator clone. We verified that.
Well, that should narrow the field. How many Liberators do you know?
Bishop led me into an off-bridge conference room. Wanting to believe Warshaw would join us, I took a seat at the table. What am I missing here?
What do you mean?
You say the war is going well.
I believe I said it was going better than we could have hoped for.
Okay, but you're hiding like a mouse in a hole. What's with the siege mentality?
What happened on Terrano?
Is that an official question?
No.
Who else is listening in on our conversation?
No one.
I don't believe you.
What happened on Terrano?
You mean before or after you guys ditched the party?
What happened on the planet? How did you get out alive?
The Unified Authority landed 3,000 Marines. I had 5,000 men. The cocky bastards didn't even bother landing more men after you left. That's how sure they were that they would win.
You faced their Marines and you survived?
Something like that.
Was there anything unusual about their troops?
Do you mean the shielded armor?
Maybe. Tell me about it.
They had shielded armor. What do you want to know? Their armor was just like ours, except that it projected a shield. Even the palms of their hands were shielded. They couldn't carry guns. They fired flechettes from tubes that ran along their arms inside their armor. Sound familiar? I placed my right hand on the table, palm up, and showed him pea-sized scars in my wrist and forearm. The flechettes had passed through my arm and armor with the ease of a sewing needle poking through a cotton shirt.
You were shot?
5 times.
You're lucky to be alive.
I wouldn't have the pleasure of sitting through this interrogation if I had died. And Warshaw wouldn't be listening in on us.
Just answer the specking questions, okay, Hotshot?
Admiral Gary Warshaw's voice came through the speakers in the ceiling. That's how it went on Terran O2. They killed everyone they hit.
Everyone but you.
Genetics. I'm a liberator. I had the mother of all combat reflexes. The doctor said there was so much adrenaline and testosterone in my blood that I should have died of a heart attack.
But you survived.
More or less. That may be my last combat reflex. The poison injured the gland. In truth, the gland had mostly healed, but I decided to keep that to myself.
That's how you survived the fight, but how did you win it?
I explained how we lured General Moreland and the UA Marines into the underground garage, then demolished the structure while we escaped through the subterranean train station in the back.
And you just left them there? You just left them there to starve?
Yes.
You speckin' bastard. Your doctor was wrong about you, Harris. You don't have adrenaline running through your veins. You've got ice.
Brilliant move.
Damn, specking right is brilliant. And I bet our boy Harris came up with the idea all on his own. Am I right, Harris?
It was my idea, but I did not say so. I did not respond. I felt like Warshaw and Bishop were hurting me somewhere I did not want to go.
What happened after you buried the Marines?
What do you mean?
Why didn't the fleet send more Marines?
I don't know.
So they just left?
Some of them left. Some of them stayed. You sank 23 of their ships.
23. I wonder what kind of damage we left behind.
They lost 12 ships trying to chase you into your broadcast zone.
They didn't even need to send more men down to the planet. Why didn't they just bombard you from space?
Maybe they didn't think we were worth the trouble. We were landlocked. They probably didn't consider us a threat.
Then they didn't know you as well as I do. Anyone who knew you would be scared. He's clean. You can bring him down.
Later that day, I spoke with Bishop in a mess reserved for captains and up. When I asked what happened to Fleet Command, he put up a hand.
Take it up with Warshaw.
You can't tell me anything?
Not my pay grade, sir. I just steer the ship.
Can you tell me where we are?
You don't know your galactic position?
How the spec would I know that?
It takes real balls to fly into a broadcast zone without knowing where you'll come out. I gotta hand it to you. You're in the Cygnus arm, enlisted man's territory. The planet out the viewport is Providence Cree.
Is that where Warshaw is hiding?
Nope. He's not even in this arm.
Are you going to tell me where he is?
He's in the tube.
What is the tube?
It's our high command. The Unifieds have their Pentagon, and we have our tube. Times have changed, General. Admiral Warshaw has 13 fleets under him. We don't just have an enlisted man's fleet anymore. We have an enlisted man's navy.
You're shitting me.
I told you. The war is going well.
So where is the tube?
That's on a need-to-know basis. You're not navigating, so you don't need to know.
You could broadcast from one end of the galaxy to the other and never know it inside a big bird like a fighter carrier. At some point, the Kamehameha entered a broadcast zone. We might have entered several, for all I knew. I went to my temporary billet to wash up and rest. A few minutes later, I got a message informing me that we had reached Naval Command and directing me to report to the landing bay. Bishop met me at the bay and escorted me to my transport.
Well, General, you're Warshaw's problem now.
Anything I should watch out for?
You'll be fine, sir. He's happy to see you.
Am I flying with the same pilot I came in with?
You have a personal pilot?
More or less.
Yeah, you're stuck with a loner pilot for this trip. Your identity checked out, but we haven't started on the guy you flew in with.
We launched into space, and I immediately saw that we were not headed for Providence Cree. The term Cree was given to planets with engineered atmospheres. Some planets were retreads,
meaning they had all the ingredients to support life, but needed the right infusions of hydrogen and oxygen along with some plant life to sustain the mixture. Seen from space, Providence Cree was a green and blue marble with layers of clouds and ice caps. It looked a lot like Earth. The planet we were heading for was arid, the color of sand, with few clouds and bone-dry poles. In the distance, a hot sun blazed. I could see its flare peeking out beyond the equatorial horizon.
What a shithole. What planet is that?
Gobi, sir.
Gobi. If that's Gobi, then we must be in the Perseus arm, right?
Yes, sir.
We dropped into the atmosphere.
Last time I came here, the fort looked like a house of cards after an earthquake.
You've been here before, sir?
Yeah, but it's been a while. I was stationed here.
No offense, sir, but you must have really pissed someone off. I wouldn't station a dog on this planet.
The new Gobi station rose out of the desert like a modern-day minaret, a single, nearly indefensible column as sleek and straight as an old-world rocket preparing to launch into space. The original station, the fort I'd once called home, was built along the side of a cliff. Not this building. The desert spread out in every direction around it. The structure stood 30 stories tall. As we approached, I spotted a ring of bunkers around the base of the structure. Tawny and mostly submerged in the sand, those bunkers could have housed 5,000 men.
How long has this building been around?
It was here when we got here.
My pilot landed the transport, and I was taken by Marine escort to Warshaw's office. If you did not know that Gary Warshaw was a clone, you might have mistaken him for a natural born. He didn't have general issue standard brown hair. In fact, he didn't have any hair at all. The man shaved his entire head from his crown to his chin, including the eyebrows. He shaved in the morning. By the end of the day, dark grain-like stubble covered his chin, neck, and head. The eyebrows, though, he might have removed with lasers. They never grew back. From a distance, Warshaw looked shorter than other clones. He wasn't, of course. He stood the standard 5'10", just like every other government-issue clone. But he looked smaller because he was wide. A fanatical bodybuilder, Warshaw began and ended every day in the gym, then supplemented his achievements with ample doses of chemistry. Warshaw had an office the size of a basketball court, which he divided into distinct areas that did not blend into one another. We met in the conference area, which included a desk and a ring of chairs.
I doubt you believe me, but I'll say it anyway. If I thought there had been the slightest chance that you survived the attack, I would have gone back looking for you.
It wouldn't have been worth the trouble. No point sending your fleet clear across the galaxy to pick up a few thousand Marines.
It depends on the Marines. For guys like you and Tomer?
Tomer is dead.
The Unified's got him?
He survived the attack and died a few days later.
Sorry to hear that. He's a good man, Tomer. Look, Harris, I don't feel like playing 20 questions with you, so I'll lay it all out. The Unifieds are running scared. We hooked up with 12 of the abandoned fleets. That gives us 13 fleets and 23 planets. Throw in Terrano, and I guess I have 24 planets. You think that Spec Doctorow wants to play ball with us?
No.
Then he's an asshole, and we don't need him. And he's alone. Earth isn't looking for new colonies, especially colonies on the far side of the galaxy. The Unifieds may be down to 2 planets, but they're not looking to grow their operation. They still have New Copenhagen, but we took something else they wanted to keep. We got the Golan Dry Docks, for all the good that does us. The Unifieds destroyed the computers and evacuated most of the personnel before we got there.
You went after the Golan Dry Docks?
They have better ships than we do. I figure one of their ships is as good as 3 of ours in a fair fight. So we don't fight fair. Anytime we see one of their ships, we send 10 of ours. It's good policy. It cuts our losses.
Have they launched any counterattacks?
Harris, their ships are better than ours, but they're still only as good as the crew sailing them. Their officers are scared. We catch a glimpse of them outside our planets and they run away like little girls.
If the war is going so well, what's with all of the security? You've got posts at every door.
You noticed that.
And why place your headquarters on Gobi? It's the shittiest planet in the galaxy.
I didn't come here for sightseeing. It's not the war that's the problem. It's the cancer that came with it. We've been infiltrated. The Unifieds can't beat us in a fight, so they're just gonna hang back and wait for us to die. Follow me.
Walking like a man who means business, Warshaw led me through the front of the infirmary into its darker reaches.
At least this building is secure.
We stepped into an antiseptic world of plastic sheets, stainless steel tables, and air that smelled of formaldehyde. Tools, both primitive and modern, arrayed on chrome-plated trays, coffin-sized tables, laser saws, and bladed scalpels. This part of the infirmary reminded me of a medieval dungeon.
You would think a place like Gobi Station would be safe.
Warshaw waved to a doctor, a short, skinny natural-born in a lab coat.
Can you get Admiral Thorn?
Thorn? He's on Gobi?
Yeah, as of last week.
The double doors spread open, and the doctor rolled a gurney into view. Until I saw that gurney, the significance of our surroundings had not occurred to me. We had walked through the infirmary and entered the morgue. We had entered the meat locker. The man whom I'd mistaken for a physician must have been a coroner. He pulled back the sheet, and there was Lawrence Thorn.
What happened to him?
His neck was broken.
How did he break it?
Somebody broke it for him.
There's bruising along the jaw.
Showing the coroner's familiarity with the dead, he turned Thorn's head to one side. Along the bottom of his wrinkled cheek, faint bruises showed in bluish ovals. The death tech placed his hand over the bruises, his fingers reaching toward the spot where the jaw met the ear. It wasn't a perfect fit, but the spread of his fingers matched the angles of the bruises.
Can you tell anything about the killer from the bruises? Size, weight, anything?
Yeah, they tell us something.
Warshaw walked to the door and signaled for one of the guards to join us. Clearly nervous around Admiral Warshaw, the petty officer approached the table. Warshaw pointed at Thorne's corpse, specifically at the dead admiral's jaw.
Put your fingers over the bruises.
The man hesitated.
Don't worry, he won't bite. This old boy won't bite anyone ever again.
The petty officer slowly lowered his hand over Thorne's cheek. He spread his fingers so that they covered the bruises. It was a perfect fit. He kept his trembling hand on the dead man's face and turned to look at Warshaw.
That will do.
The hand shot up.
Go wash up and get back to your post. It's like Cinderella, only this time, everybody's foot fits the slipper.
He was killed by a clone.
Yeah. Doesn't narrow down the list much, does it? The only ones on this base we can be assured did not do it are you and me. I'm natural born and you're a liberator. Our fingers don't fit.
I'm not synthetic.
Yeah, and the good doctor here, he's natural born too. It's not just Thorn. They killed Lilburn Franks. They got him the same way, broke his neck. One of his lieutenants found him on the floor in his quarters. Speckin' nasty way to go, a broken neck. They killed three of my top five officers, Harris. Two of them were killed right here, right in this base. They hit us even harder a few pay grades down. The Unifieds hit so many officers in the Central Norma fleet, we had to shut down one of our fighter carriers. We didn't have enough officers for the chain of command. How do you fight back against something like this? It's like they hit us with a speckin' ghost. You know what the worst part is? I don't know what to do about it. It's like we conquered the whole speckin' galaxy and now we're dying of cancer.
Warshaw gave me a couple of hours to rest before dinner. Then he had me meet him back in his office.
Hope you don't mind eating in my office. I eat all my meals here.
Warshaw had a dining room tucked away in one corner of his office-living complex. The table was large enough to seat a dozen officers. Sitting alone at that table, he looked big and strong and terrified. He had two armed guards posted inside the door to his complex and four more just outside. A steward waited by the door as well. He watched me sit, gave me a moment to get comfortable, then came over to the table.
And give me a beer.
Just water.
The steward brought us our drinks and left without another word.
I served on this planet. We were stationed in an old sandstone fortress with a swamp for a courtyard. We drank filtered sludge from the swamp.
I know the place. It's out near Morrowtown, right? I went to see the ruins.
Is that far from here?
Other side of the planet. When I first got here, they told me there were these ruins from the original Gobi Station. It's like a historical site, you know, or something for tourists. As if any tourists ever came to this place. They treat the place like a museum exhibit. They have guides and tours, and they take you into the living quarters and shit. There's a plaque that says something about the attack on Gobi being the first shots fired in the Mogat War.
I was there during the attack. The fort had a regional armory. That's what the Mogats were after. Crowley led them on that one.
Crowley? No wonder the fort got so banged up.
I was lucky to get out of there alive.
Yeah, well, speaking of being lucky, you got lucky on Terrano. Every time my Marines run into the Unifieds, we get our nuts flattened.
As I started to say something about that, the steward came back to take our orders.
We'll have the salmon.
The steward nodded and left once again.
They have salmon here?
It's flown in. So, you got any ideas for stopping UA Marines that don't involve demolishing an underground garage?
I do. Wait till their batteries run out, then stick it to them.
I explained about the short-life batteries.
Good call, Harris. You'll beat the whole damn Unified Authority Marine Corps as long as they don't bring spares.
We dug some of them out.
You dug them out? That doesn't sound like you. An act of compassion. That's something new. I didn't know you had it in you.
After they were dead, I wanted a better look at their armor. That was how we found out about the batteries.
Warshaw nodded. Our fish arrived, sautéed and dusted with almonds. The smell of salmon and onions filled the air. It was the best meal I had eaten in over a year. My plate was large and buried under enough fish and wild rice to last me a week. The meal came with white wine.
Did you test the batteries yourself?
Do you remember Scott Mars?
Yeah, I know Mars. Good engineer. I already went born-again Christian.
Yeah, they call him the born-again clone.
And Mars found out about the batteries?
The shielding works off a 45-minute battery. The battery drains even quicker when anything touches the shields.
Mobility versus power. I guess they can't make the battery too big or the Marines can't move.
Warshaw put down his fork and stretched his arms, moving his bald head from side to side.
The enlisted man's Marine Corps needs a commandant. Of course, now that we know you're alive, you get the job. From here on out, Harris, you and I are equals.
You didn't believe that back at Terrano.
Things have changed. We need a man like you.
Someone to wear a bullseye on his back?
I wouldn't put it in so many words.
How would you put it?
How would I put it? I'd put it this way. We've got a security problem, General. I want you to find our rats, lead them into some underground hole, and bury them. For good.
Warshaw had one lead. One thin lead to help me track down the security breach. That lead came in the form of three dead bodies on a planet called St. Augustine. Back in my billet, I pulled on a pair of media link shades and read about the planet. It didn't take long to realize that if I wanted to track down a breach in security, St. Augustine, the rest and recreation capital of the enlisted man's empire, was a promising place to start. If there was a place where our sailors would let down their guard, it was St. Augustine, a planet with beaches, hotels, and very few men. Several years ago, when the Avatari attacked St. Augustine, the Unified Authority had left the locals to fend for themselves. The people of St. Augustine fought to the figurative last man. Once they ran out of men, the women and children went into hiding, and the aliens simply went away. When the enlisted man's empire liberated the planet, the women of St. Augustine welcomed our sailors and Marines. Having lived without men for more than 2 years, they welcomed us rather intimately. I left for St. Augustine the following day. As the commandant of the Marines, I traveled with an entourage. Warshaw assigned me a staff that included a one-star admiral, three captains, and enough lieutenants to man a small fleet, all of them tainted. These were men who had played the power game and come up short for one reason or another. Now they wanted to redeem themselves. I brought them along as camouflage, but I did not trust them. I did not like traveling with remora fish in my wake. But fleet officers were expected to have an entourage, and a lone wolf general would elicit suspicion. Admiral J. Winston Cabot, supposedly my liaison to Warshaw and Naval Command, was officious, petty, politically motivated, and I suspected something of a coward. I decided that much about him during the 15 minutes it took us to travel from Gobi and land on St. Augustine. A simpering politician by nature, Cabot all but attached himself to my person. Once Warshaw introduced us, the little ferret swooped right in on me, warning the other officers of the entourage away with a threatening glance. He chattered mindlessly in the beginning, but giving credit where credit is due, the little bastard read me accurately after a couple of minutes and settled down, allowing me to think. Had he known what I was thinking, Cabot might have given me more space. What came to my mind was how incredibly interchangeable he was, like a gear in an old-fashioned clock. There he sat, a 52-year-old general-issue clone with brown eyes and slightly grayed brown hair, and nothing to distinguish himself beyond his uniform. And therein was the problem. If the Unified Authority had developed some kind of new cloning program, there would be no way to stop them from infiltrating our military. If their clones truly had the same DNA as ours, they would be identical. We could place posts by every hatch on every ship and run hourly DNA scans of every sailor, and the bastards would slip through our net. We flew from Gobi to St. Augustine on the Kamehameha. Bishop walked me to the landing bay, to the transport I would be taking.
That's the best you could get me? I'm the specking commandant of the enlisted man's Marines.
That's the best I have.
My entourage hung around me like flies.
Go ahead and board.
All of them boarded except for Cabot. He lingered, having decided that the order was meant for everyone but him.
Do you need something, Admiral?
No, sir.
Then board the transport. How do you put up with this shit?
You'll learn to love it.
Bullshit.
After reliving the uniform dryness of Gobi, I had a greater appreciation for the greens and blues of St. Augustine. The planet had oceans, rivers, and lakes. It had pastures, mountains, and ice-capped poles. From space, Gobi looked like a ball carved out of unfinished wood. By comparison, St. Augustine looked like a well-polished opal. Cabot came up to the cockpit to check in on me.
General, will we have time to inspect the officers' R&R facilities while we're on St. Augustine? I haven't tried them myself, but I hear good things.
We're not here to inspect the facilities.
Yes, sir. I'm just saying that I understand they're supposed to be nice, you know, if we get the chance. Why are we here?
We're here to look at corpses.
The transport punched into the atmosphere.
Corpses?
Three of them. Maybe more if we're lucky.
Who died, sir?
Clones. There are three dead clones on St. Augustine, but none of the ships have reported any missing men.
I'm not sure what you're getting at, sir.
Three men died on R&R, right? So they couldn't have reported for duty when their leave ran out. Only they found these guys last week, and none of our ships have reported anyone missing.
Someone must have reported in their place. Spies?
Worse. Assassins.
St. Augustine had three continents and 25 cities, each of which had a police department manned by MPs. It did not take long to determine that the various law enforcement groups did not share information among themselves.
Bodies found in other cities?
The commander of the Petersboro Police was a lowly ensign on loan from one of our ships.
Yes. Have you heard anything about dead clones turning up in other cities?
I haven't, sir. Nothing.
We stood in the morgue, three occupied body bags lying on tables before us. I had come with my entourage, and the ensign had come with his as well. It made for a crowded room.
Perhaps you could get one of your men on the horn to find out.
Yes, sir.
The commander turned to one of his men and communicated his orders without speaking. The man saluted and left, making the room one body less crowded.
Do you have any information on any of these men? Names? Units? Which ships they came from?
Oh, no, sir.
I approached the first bag and opened it far enough to reveal the head and face within. The mess that stared out at me did not look like a clone. Its skin was the purple of a fresh plum. The face was moon-shaped, a fat blue tongue poking out between black lips.
What happened to him?
He drowned.
Are you sure he's a clone? He doesn't look like a clone.
The ensign looked back into the crowd.
Andy, can you come in here? Tell the general what you told me?
Unlike everyone else in the room, Andy was a natural-born, probably a local doctor pressed into performing forensic medicine. He was a short man with fiery orange hair and heavily freckled skin.
He was 3 days dead when he washed up.
Are you sure he was a clone?
Oh, he's a clone. There's no doubt about that. I ran a tissue sample. I checked his teeth, too. You can always tell by the teeth.
The examiner unzipped the body bag farther, revealing open incisions in the cadaver's throat, chest, and gut.
We drained a quart of water from his lungs.
So he died of natural causes?
We didn't find anything to suggest he was murdered, if that's what you mean.
How about this one?
I took a step toward the next table. I opened the bag enough to reveal the badly deformed face. Great pains had been taken to clean this corpse, but the skin around the cheeks looked like melted plastic. Bone showed through his skin along the top of his forehead. Despite all of the wreckage to the rest of his face, the man's undamaged eyes stared up at the ceiling.
This one died in a fire.
Yes, I see that. One man drowns, and the next one burns. St. Augustine is a dangerous planet.
Actually, he died of asphyxiation. It's fairly common. Most people choke on the smoke long before the fire gets them.
Did you find anything to suggest—
Foul play? Murder? It's hard to tell. No broken bones, but on a body like this, burning can hide contusions and abrasions.
Andy pulled one of the man's hands free of the body bag, holding it up by the wrist for me to get a closer look.
There's not much we can get from this. His hands could have been cuffed or tied together before he died, and we wouldn't know. Not when the body is this badly burned.
That's very convenient.
We didn't find any cuffs or rope at the scene.
Have you investigated the cause of the fire?
We haven't looked into it, sir.
Maybe you'd better get someone on that.
Yes, sir. Sir, I don't have anyone with that kind of MOS.
Investigating arson was not a typical military occupation specialty, and none of the local MPs had any experience in that field.
Tell me about this one.
I moved to the last of the corpses.
He didn't die of natural causes. Someone snapped his neck.
The dead man had a startled expression. His glassy eyes opened so wide they looked like they might roll out of their sockets.
Ensign, why weren't we notified about this?
We were notified. That's why we're here.
Yes, sir.
Cabot, come here.
I pointed to the dead man's jaw.
Admiral Cabot, place your fingers over these bruises.
I don't see what you're...
Just humor me.
Cabot placed his hand across the point of the jaw, his thumb on one side and the fingers on the other. The fit, of course, was perfect. He stared down at the way his fingers covered the bruises in shock.
Sir, you can't possibly think...
Not at all.
Cabot did not know why his hand fit the bruises so perfectly, but everyone else understood my point. The killer was a clone. St. Augustine had 25 cities and 130 resort areas. We had military police patrolling most of the big resorts, but the smaller ones provided their own security. Apparently, it never occurred to the locals to call for help when bodies trickled in. One of my lieutenants reported in to me.
We just heard back from Goshen Beach Station. They got 4 stiffs.
I'm going for a walk.
Where are you going?
Out for fresh air. Alone.
There may be a murderer out there.
At least one.
Maybe I should go...
You don't really think I need you along for protection.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one, sir.
It was early in the evening. The sky had not gone dark, but the streetlights had come on. From the reports, I expected to see nothing but women, children, and clones on the planet. That was not the case. Groups of teenage boys roamed the streets. Old men worked the shops. And there were fighting-age men as well, locals who had survived the invasion. Maybe half the men I passed were clones, maybe only a third. Petersboro was no resort town. It had probably been an industrial center before the Avatari invaded. I walked along the streets, decorated by an odd combination of iron doors and glittering storefronts. One block gave way to the next. It was nearing 2000 hours, and I had not eaten since lunch, so I found a promising-looking restaurant, bar, and headed in. 2 hours after the dinner hour, the place was still half full, with a few couples leaving as I came in. The tall, well-curved hostess approached me.
Hello, soldier. My name's Debbie.
I stood 6'3", and she came up to my eyes. She studied my blouse for a moment and smiled.
You must be an important man.
How do you mean?
You have a lot of ribbons.
She had olive skin and silky brown hair that hung straight down past her shoulders, then formed curls at the end. She had blue eyes that were narrow and small. Her eyes had an angry set, but her smile was friendly. She wore a dark blue dress with a cut that showed the tops of her breasts.
You see action, and they give you ribbons.
You must have seen a lot of action.
More than I'd like to admit.
Is that how you got those stars? I've seen men with bars and leaves pinned on their collars, but I've never seen stars.
Lieutenants wear bars. Majors wear clusters.
Let me find you a table, General.
How do you know I'm a general?
She led me across the floor. The eatery was not all candles and violins, but it wasn't burgers and fries either. The lighting was low, and the waitresses wore dresses instead of uniforms. Debbie sat me at a table near the back of the restaurant. I half hoped she would give me a card, a phone number, or a slip of paper stating what time she got off work. At the moment, Ava seemed far, far away. Debbie touched me on the shoulder.
Your waitress will be right with you.
I watched the girl walk away and knew that I might well fantasize about her for the next night or two. Compared to the hostess, my waitress seemed positively plain. She was short and slender, with shoulder-length blonde hair.
Are you really a general?
I am.
Can I ask you a question?
You mean besides what I want to eat? Sure. What is it?
Are we safe now? Are the aliens gone for good?
Gone for good.
She said nothing, and I wondered if she believed me. Maybe she realized the same thing I did, that sometimes it is better not to know what lurks around the corner.
What's your name?
Lyra.
Lyra. Those aliens weren't soldiers. They were businessmen. They didn't come looking for a war, and when we gave them one, they went to bother someone else.
Lyra saw things as they were. I spoke to her the way I would speak to a scared child, but she knew war and death as intimately as I did, and she took no comfort from my reassurance. She let me say my piece, thanked me, then recited the specials of the day. I ordered baked fish and wild rice, hoping it would be as good as the meal I'd eaten with Warshaw. The restaurant had a bar near the front, the kind of place that would attract conscripts and officers alike. The bar sat on a slightly raised floor that overlooked the rest of the restaurant. Debbie, the hostess, must have worked the bar as well as the restaurant floor. I saw her walk in, heads turning to follow her, and disappear into the darkness of the bar. That was when I spotted the Phantom. He sat alone at a small table, quietly looking around the floor. He might have been either a Marine or a sailor, a clone to be sure, but dressed in a bright tropical shirt and slacks, the typical serviceman on leave. The man was not trolling for girls, that much was clear. Time passed as he slowly nursed his beer. A waitress ran her rounds in his part of the bar. When she saw his untouched glass, she approached the table and said something to him. He answered, and she rolled her eyes and walked away. The man leaned back and rested his arm on the rail that separated the bar from the rest of the restaurant. He casually surveyed the bar, then the eatery. The move looked so relaxed, so subtle. Too relaxed. It felt calculated to put people at ease. As he scanned the restaurant, his gaze eventually drifted to my table. I saw him looking in my direction, and he saw me staring back. I expected him to turn away, but he didn't. His eyes stayed on me as he took in my insignia, or possibly counted the stars on my collar. He met my gaze with a look that showed neither fear nor nervousness, then calmly pulled out his wallet and dropped a few bills on the table. Without looking back, he abandoned his money and his half-finished beer. I started to go after him. I stood, then questioned myself. What did I have? Why would I stop him? He didn't finish his beer. Big specking deal. What did that prove? I sat back down. My fish arrived. I sat and I ate, and I rewound the scene and watched it over and over again in my head. A clone comes into the bar. He sits alone. So what? After my meal, I returned to the police station and found Cabot.
General, I...
Spit it out, Cabot.
Well, where the hell have you been?
Did you just say hell? Cabot turned red and stared at the floor. Did you just ask me where the hell I went?
Sorry, sir.
I went out for a quick dinner.
You left 3 hours ago, sir. We have MPs combing the city for you.
Good Lord. You're like an obsessive mother and a nagging wife all rolled into one. You called the police because you didn't know how to find me?
General, you were gone for 3 hours. We were just looking at bodies, sir. I have every MP in the city searching for you. The station is on high alert.
High alert? Cabot, we need to do some serious field training on police procedures down here. I was able to walk in here without anyone even noticing me.
We've received body counts from every precinct on the planet except for one, a town called Sunmark.
What's the count at?
We're up to 503 bodies found in the last 3 weeks.
That's a lot of bodies. 500 stiffs? And it never occurred to anyone that there might be an epidemic?
General, that's 503 bodies planet-wide, on a planet that doesn't have centralized communications.
Any idea when we'll hear from the last station?
We haven't been able to reach them. The town is not very far from here. I sent some men to knock on their door.
Cabot heard back from his men an hour later. The Sunmark police station was empty. As far as anyone could tell, all our MPs were MIA, and probably worse. The ghost precinct was less than 100 miles away. By the time I arrived with my entourage to investigate, it was 0013, a cursed time if such a thing could exist. Standing outside the building, I saw rows of flood lamps through one of the windows. There was a generator in the distance. My entourage and I entered the building. A Marine sergeant met me at the door, and I was glad to see him. When it came to dirty work, I preferred having Marines around me. Found anything?
They fought a small war in here, sir.
Any survivors?
So far, we can't tell, sir. The people remaining the station are MIA.
No bodies? Just inside the door, the first splash of dried blood started about 5 feet up on the wall and stretched to the floor in dribbles. A foot-wide, rust-colored pool had formed below it. They'd caught their first victim off guard. He'd been standing tall when he was shot in the head. Was this the only victim?
The whole goddamn building looks like this, sir. We're taking blood samples and scraping shit off the walls.
Good idea. It wasn't, though. all of the blood would be the same general-issue clone blood. If we knew anything about these assassins, it was that they were clones just like us. The good guys and bad guys would have the exact same makeup in this fight, right down to their DNA. The next victim had been caught unawares as well. He must have been at a desk. The chair he'd been sitting in lay on its back on the floor. There was no blood on the chair, but blood and brains covered the wall and the filing cabinet behind the desk. Do you have any idea what happened to the bodies?
No, sir. But whoever attacked the station destroyed the computers.
Destroyed them? Across the floor, computer cases and cabinets lay spread across the floor like trash. No big loss, though. A platoon of MPs had been temporarily assigned to man a precinct on a stretch of sandy beach. They probably had not kept careful records. Do we know how long the power has been out?
No, sir, not yet.
Do we know what happened to it? Do we know if the neighbors still have power? I looked out the window and saw light in some of the windows across the street.
This appears to be the only building without power.
Shit. Whatever happened in this building was not a war or a battle. It was an assassination. In the old days, communication signals were routed across the galaxy using the broadcast network. Somehow, Gary Warshaw and his enlisted engineers had restored pan-galactic communications using their limited broadcast network. It was nothing short of a miracle. Warshaw called me that evening. Where are you?
I'm on Gobi. Something wrong with that?
I didn't know you had pan-galactic communications.
Yeah, well, we got a network up, so why not? You making any progress on your investigation?
We found a lot of bodies. Over 500 of them so far.
All clones?
Yep, all clones. There were a few in every city.
Murdered?
Drownings, car accidents, fires, a couple of outright murders. St. Augustine is a revolving door with 80,000 men running through at any time. I bet we haven't even found half the breakage yet. All we have are the bodies that floated to the surface.
That's what I like about you, Harris. Always the optimist.
I contacted the ships that went to St. Augustine on leave and had them check their service logs. In the last 2 months, less than 30 men were reported absent without leave. Every last one of them showed up sooner or later. According to the logs, none of those 500 stiffs came from your ships.
But you think the logs are wrong?
They have to be. And that's 500 bodies so far. Who knows how many bodies we'll find by the time we finish here?
You think I have 500 saboteurs in my ships?
Sooner or later, it's going to get ugly. Are you keeping yourself safe?
Maybe I'll move my operation back to Kamehameha. How are they going to hit me on a big ship like that?
Where was Franks when they got him?
On the Obama. But Franks didn't know what he was hiding from. I have a better idea, thanks to you.
Glad to be of service. So what are you watching for?
Anything that moves. How about you? What are you doing to keep safe?
If you wanted me to play it safe, you shouldn't have painted a specking target on my back.
At least you got the Toe Touchers Brigade watching your back. And I hear you called in an intelligence unit.
Toe Touchers Brigade?
Yeah. Cabot didn't tell you why he lost his command? Remember Faye?
Cabot was a spy?
Shit, Harris, I just told you he was a toe toucher. He lost his command for conduct on becoming an officer. I thought having him along might help you relieve any stress.
Get specked.
At least I didn't paint the bullseye on your ass. You'll survive this one, Harris. You always survive.
I'm in a town called Sunmark. Ever heard of it?
Can't say I have.
It's a small coast town surrounded by a lot of jungle.
Yeah, so?
I have 200 men searching the jungle for bodies. Let's say one of my guys gets nixed while taking a leak in the woods. Next thing you know, one of the men watching my back is an assassin. Then how safe will I be?
You sound paranoid.
Paranoid? The last time I saw you, you were hiding in a high-security base in the middle of a desert with guards and DNA reading posts by every entrance and elevator.
What's your point?
How many guards are you going to have around you on the Kamehameha?
Four. Same as always.
How many guards are you going to have posted on your deck?
Having a platoon is standard operating procedure.
Are you going to tour the ship?
Maybe.
Are you going to take the whole platoon with you?
Okay. I apologize for calling you paranoid. What are you going to do next?
First, we find out how badly we've been infiltrated. Then we stop the leaks. Then we catch a spy and figure out what makes him different from a run-of-the-mill clone.
And that fixes everything.
Well, then we need to round up the enemy clones. That's going to be the hard part. The axe came down that afternoon. We might have been able to stop the leaks. We might have been able to catch a killer clone and examine him under a microscope. But it did not look like we would ever untangle how badly we'd been infiltrated. At 1500 hours, Admiral Cabot informed me that the intelligence unit had found a mass grave in the jungle. Bored stiff from 2 days spent sitting in an office, I took the news more enthusiastically than he expected. In fact, I insisted we drive into the jungle and oversee the excavation. By that time, a large security detail of locals and clones had arrived in Sunmark. Armed civilians patrolled the streets. MPs and militiamen manned the police station. The town was beginning to look like a prison. I had hoped to escape all of the security precautions by going out to the gravesite, but it didn't work that way. Cabot arranged for a convoy escort.
You'd think we were headed to a battle, not a burial.
Did you say something, sir?
My driver heard me, though. He was a Marine. I caught his sardonic smile in the mirror. I wondered how many men we might find in that grave. No one had given me the details. The grave could have been huge or small. We drove away from the coast and into the jungle, trading bright sun for dappled light and shadows. Following a guidance signal from the site, we turned down a dirt path that led through trampled plants and into heavy undergrowth. The road led us through a maze of broad-leafed plants that looked like blood-red banana trees, vines, bamboo, and tall trees with wide trunks. We bounced along for another 15 miles before we reached a clearing in which men in fatigues prowled a low ridge. The first man to reach my car wore an air filter over his nose and mouth. He pulled it off.
General, you will probably want to stay in your car unless you have an oxygen mask.
That bad?
Yes, sir.
Poisonous or just smelly?
Reeking, sir.
I hate this shit. I would not like what I saw, but I'd seen death and decay before. The men near the grave wore jumpsuits that were wet and soiled. They wore full face masks with clear hoods over their ears, hair, and necks. The air smelled bad, sweet and putrid at the same time. I recognized the scent of rotting bodies in the liquid air. The pit was 20 feet long, no more than 6 feet wide, and shallow. A small silver canister lay on the ground beside it. The word Noxium ran down the length of both sides. Suddenly, looking into that pit was the last thing I wanted to do. There were no bodies inside the grave, not even so much as a human finger. What I saw was a writhing carpet of pearly white maggots feeding in the flesh-colored soup that might once have been 40 or 50 men. Soggy uniforms lay in the mix, along with boots, belts, and weapons.